are back, underground espionage episode 48. Tara, you're back.
Here I am, Mike.
I'm back.
You were back.
We did miss a week unexpectedly. We were swamped with other recording duties and felt that we didn't want to leave that zone. It was a call in the moment, said, hey, we're in this zone. We need to stay in this zone. I think the UE listeners will understand.
And I may have gotten sick again.
I mean, look.
It's possible. Well, you know, shit happens.
Maybe you should be drinking ox blood, Tara, and then maybe.
Yeah, delicious ox blood.
Cure all your illness. But we are excited. Our main feature today is Fascination Jean Roland. This is our first episode on a Jean Roland movie, which I'm going to go ahead and say there's going to be a bunch more because it has been the 2026 has been the Jean Roland year for us. It has been the world we've wanted to stay in, live in. We have watched many Jean Roland movies.
Yeah, it's not like we find a new thing we like and we're like, well, I like that one thing. I'm not going to explore more.
We're like, oh, I like that.
So everyone's on the journey with us because yes. We hadn't dipped our toes in very far. And now we're ready to do a cannonball into the pool of Jean Roland.
Correct. And fittingly, our buddy who entered us into the world of Jess Franco so many years ago is also responsible for us entering the world of Jean Roland. And while there's certainly the idea of 70s erotic filmmakers, mm-hmm. you think of these two, but they are very different, and I'm excited to dig into the cinema of Jean Roland. Of course, we'll always be digging into the cinema of Jess Franco. That'll never stop.
Yeah.
But I think it's fitting that the last episode is Jess Franco, and this episode is Jean Roland.
Absolutely.
What else, Tara? It has been a packed week of recording. I attended some shows.
You attended so many shows. I can't believe it. It's amazing.
I feel like I did two shows being so many. But yeah, Tara was not feeling so good. And it was decided that I would roll solo, which is people were, there was some shock and awe that not only shock and awe that I was attending gigs, but that I was doing it on my own. And absolutely massive shout out. Fittingly, we're speaking of a French movie. Saw a great French band, Kickback. Saw them for the second time, and that was incredible. That was so insane. Multiple injuries. Luckily, everyone's okay.
Thank goodness.
Not me. I, people always joke that I will be like, hey, I'm hanging in the back tonight. Totally not going to get in the mix. And then cut to me in the mix as the band is raging.
Yes, being flung about. Did you run in a little bit in New York?
Not for Kickback.
No.
But I mean, yes, for Departure, for when during the Vatican Salford Ancient Method sets, when Don pulled out Meal Can Be Made. Yeah, I went insane. Yeah. So that will still happen.
I mean, I just don't want my teeth knocked out at
the
this
windmills
point.
And the karate kicks of a Kickback crowd is just
If I had a mouth guard, I would be more likely. No. It's like I'm not afraid to take a hit, take a punch, fall down.
Yeah.
But I really just don't at this point in my life need my teeth to be knocked
this
out
is not,
yet again. Like I'm done. That's a young lady's game to have a teeth knocked out in a show.
We have too many teeth issues.
Oh my god!
And too many teeth issues that are going to be continuing.
Well, you have teeth issues.
So do you.
I have a place where my teeth used to be issues.
We both have issues.
Yeah. So I'm not about to risk that shit.
But no. I had a perfect spot just right on the railing. I was completely content. It was just all us just hanging back there was great. The set was amazing, and super happy I gotten to see them now twice.
Yeah, I had a great time at home just doing weird stuff.
Yeah.
I got all kinds of weird stuff done.
Yeah. So it's been a, it was a, I feel, I was saying this to you, Tara, that sometimes when I going out in situations, I come back feeling down and very like
full of anxiety.
Yeah, I don't even know if anxiety is the word. I mean, like one of the last like small shows I went to, I literally got sick.
Yeah, afterwards. And depressed.
Like literally got sick. And so yeah. I always get a little, you know, hesitant when it comes down to like, oh, you know, about an hour away. I'm like, oh, am I really going? I am actually really happy I went out to both the shows, and I actually have said that I feel this year is we're taking the reins of 2026.
Promising.
And it continued my feeling of that. So it's the Genreland year. It's the year of taking the reins. And it's the year of pretty exciting stuff that we've been working on here that we'll all be seeing the light of day as the year continues, and plenty more stuff to come. So, and you look, you know, we're in the swing of UE in its second year. So excited to discuss all the things we will be discussing.
Well, I have one out of left field to discuss. I have two things.
Always, Tara. One, what we have? What do we have in Tara News?
Relates to the film that we've watched in some aspect. The other one, absolutely in no way. I'm just going to drop it in for everybody's thought fodder. So, trees when they fall down. You think of trees in the forest that are laying on the ground, and you think of them as kind of like rotting, decaying, turning into dirt. You know, we've been listening to like Mike a lot of black metal at yes. night, and so we were listening, and I was painting like a decaying old forest as we're listening and thinking about these things, and then this vague memory popped into my head about how trees evolved before bacteria that broke down trees. And so in old forests, like we're talking not ancient, but like primordial forests, where just trees existed, they were not eaten by bacteria, so they didn't decay. Isn't that unusual?
So what, they just stayed?
Yes, so trees existed for millions of years before bacteria evolved to break down and decay the wood. So as they developed more sturdy wood, they would just fall down and lay there and nothing happened to the wood. It wasn't rotting. It wasn't turning into soil. It wasn't turning over, doing any of that. It just laid there. But then that's what caused those massive, massive fires. You know, when you think about...
we're talking back...
Dinosaur times.
Whoa.
Yeah. So you're thinking like ancient like drawings that they would have in textbooks. Like ancient drawings, not ancient drawings, but modern drawings they would
of
have in text,
times.
Illustrating those times, you know, whatever. I don't know the exact time. It's not pre-Cambrian, it's post-Cambrian, it's like pre-Jurassic.
No one's gonna,
I guess Jurassic is when trees evolved. Fuck.
No one's going to call you out.
I used to know when goddamn trees evolved, and I don't know it right now.
No one is mad.
Anyway, whatever one of those times... where trees existed, there were no bacteria to break them down. So that would spark massive, massive fires, and that was the only way to clear the forest floor of the wood. Isn't that fascinating?
Yes. I mean,
that's
was it something
when
new
you think
that
about
you...
those giant fires? No.
Oh,
I
got
thinking,
you. I thought this was leading to
It's not leading
a
to anything, but I was thinking about it while I was painting.
I got you.
Trees,
I'm sorry. I got you.
And I thought everybody would enjoy thinking about that first we had trees, then we had bacteria, because you think of things decaying as just a natural part of life, right? You just think as leaves fall down, they decay, or something would slowly like turn into dirt or powder. But there are actually other forces that we aren't seeing that are causing those things to happen, that are causing that decay of the shell where the living thing was, you know? Like if a human's in a vacuum and it has no bacteria, we're not going to decay. Like the horror stories of people being stuck under glass and they look the same as the day that they died, you know? So that's kind of the situation that we're in, these forests. And like we don't think about all those other seemingly supernatural but actually microscopic events that are taking place to cause that cycle of us turning into dirt.
We are preserved. So I just we're
flesh
hanging
bodies.
On a thread.
We're just
hanging
meat bags.
On a thread.
We're just meat bags hanging on by a thread, animated meat bags with some bones stuck in there somewhere. But the more pertinent thing I had that, again, I like those are fun, whatever. I should have had the timeline down, but you know, it's not really that important. Again, no one's really more like being excited about something.
No one's angry at you.
And then the other thing that happened is that I was talking to a friend, and
a friend, and
you know, we were talking about somebody was wearing a scent, and I said, "Oh, they smell like a dandy fop." And this friend is European, and they were like, "I don't think we use terms like that anymore." And I was like, "Is fop a slur?" Like, all of a sudden, I'm like starting to question myself. Like, am I not allowed to call someone a dandy fop? Like, that doesn't seem right. So I had to do a little research, Mike. And I've decided, well, I decided even before I did the research that I would continue to call someone a dandy fop if I so desired. But it's not that strong of a term. It was a pejorative term for a man excessively concerned with his appearance in 17th century England. But there are some fun similar terms. Would you like to know any of the similar terms used for 17th century foppish lads, such as coxcomb, fribble, a popinjay, which meant parrot, like, you know, a little popinjay over there, a dandy. So again, a dandy fop, a double pejorative. Well, I whipped out there to offend the European. That's okay. Fashion monger and ninny.
Look, I think these are all okay to say. If anyone from the 1700s is offended by anything we say, well, guess what?
Sorry, 1700s, Joma. Sorry.
Not even sorry.
No, 17th century, so 1600s.
Hey, Joma. Not even sorry.
So, but also the fun, which I never understood that shit. Like, why is it always one different? Anyway, then another one that is just brings it all full circle and reminds us that we all learn this shit in school and like elementary school. But then we immediately forget it because who cares? Macaroni was another term of the 18th century specifically concerned with fashion. So if you think of Yankee Doodle,
I was
stuck
just
a feather
say,
in his hat and called it macaroni.
I was just going to say.
He's like, I'm being a fancy guy. So basically, he's like putting a feather in his hat and being like, I'm dead. It's macaroni. So again, I...
Yankee Doodle Dandy.
I know he's a dandy too. See, why would we have a song with a slur in it? I say to you, no one's ever heard of a song with a slur in it.
Never.
But I do think we should like bring macaroni back.
I mean, I think it's too late. I think it's too associated with the delicious.
Oh God, food. I love macaroni. But I might the next time if you come out and you're peacocking about Poppin' Jay and up and down the block here. I might call you macaroni.
Well, I like it.
Not a fop, because
these are the
too pejorative
type of educational lessons that we dole out here on Underground Espionage.
Really important stuff
it's,
here.
Look,
really
it,
important.
You know,
stuff.
This is what people they want to hear about. You know, trees and bacteria. They want to hear about old timey words from the 1600s.
Do you want to insult somebody in a powdered wig? Call them fribble. Call him a coxcomb. Call him a ninny.
Well, Tara, I'm going to do that.
Thanks.
I'm going to do it this week. Someone's getting called one of these things this
I
week.
I guarantee it.
Absolutely. Well, man, I am excited to talk about fascination.
Fascinación.
Wow. What an incredible movie. What a strike. Of course, the cover image of the Blu-ray that we have, but just the cover image and the image that stands out from this movie. Bridget Lahy. Am I pronouncing that right, Tara? I know you are definitely much better at any sort of pronunciation, but especially French pronunciation.
Well, it's interesting. Her name, it would be Brigitte Lahy, but she's actually Dutch. And so she changed her name from the Dutch spelling, which would be, oh, Lord in heaven. I have it somewhere. I can actually amuse everybody by attempting to say something Dutch. Oh, man, it's too far away. I'm
too
not
far
say
away.
It. Anyway, essentially, I'll just, you know what? I'll make it brief. Essentially, her name meant the hedge, like Van der Heijen. And so she turned it into the French version. So Lahy means the hedge in French. So she Frenched it up with her other name. So and I appreciate it. She is phenomenal.
Well, she is
the hedge.
Incredible. And this is another friend of ours was saying it was Vampire February, and he wanted vampire movie recommendations. And so we were giving him, and then I started thinking about the vampire movies that are not directly supernatural, but are vampire in blood fetishism, or in just, is it real or is it not, you know? And so of course The Black Room was recommended to him, and he just flipped out and loved it. Of course, one of our favorite movies, covered last year, and Fascination. And this is another one that is in that realm of, is this, are the vampires,
is this, there magic, is there correct. Something supernatural going on, or is it just the human belief?
Correct.
Or it does actually, you know, drinking blood do something really phenomenally fantastic for your corpuscle. Yeah, absolutely. And Vampire February makes sense because,
I mean, you know,
February, again, I'm not trying to rub it in, but February, March, while living in the colder climates, while being in Detroit, was always that time where you're just over it. Like, you don't have the Christmas holiday. You made it through January.
Look, so many of our people are dealing with blizzards right now.
Then the freaking late February blizzard hits, the bomb cyclone, the ice storm that always hits, or early March, and you're just miserable, and you're like, when is this shit going to end? Everything seems bleak. You don't want to go anywhere. And it just, that feels very vampire, right?
Yeah.
Like,
well, and
holding up, being isolated, being cold, being miserable.
And just the, you know, Valentine's Day, bloody Valentine's, you know, the romance and the darkness, right? So all of that mixed together.
It's just ready to consume people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it does fit, and Pale Blood was another one he
God,
loved.
I love Pale Blood.
Yeah, Pale Blood. So, but, and then of course, you know, Jean Rollin did so many, and Rec Room for a Vampire was really what kicked this zone off for us, and it's just one of those where 2 minutes into that movie, it's like, oh, this is a Tara, like, it's like, oh, it's like somebody, like, pulled a, you know, Tara's brain apart, took it back to the 70s and then made this scene, you know, of that opening section of Requiem for a Vampire with the girls as clowns, like, running around shooting pistols.
Oh my God, I love it. They're romping through the countryside dressed as clowns on motorcycles and pew-pewing up and down the block. Oh, I just love it so much.
So great. But this is later 70s, and Jean Rollin will have, and he would have gone through many different phases at this point, from, you know, Requiem for Vampires, vampire movies. He went away from some of the vampire stuff, did some porn, mainly for money at a certain point, because it was just, that's what was needed and that's what was going to make him money. This is where he met Brigitte. You know,
that
doing
makes
these.
Me so happy, knowing that somebody's like, I need some dough, I'm going to make porn.
Yeah. And so most of those were under a pseudonym, but there was one that he did really like that he had his name on. But he, you know, he would keep coming back to the vampire stuff throughout, you know, move away a little bit, come back and do one, move away from a little bit, come back and do one. And this is going to be, you know, a later one, like you said, 1979. But this just stands out on its own as just this striking movie that you can just sit back and, again, as I always say, just let it unfold. You just sit back and the images are so perfect. You can focus on an image, you can focus on a certain aspect of the movie throughout, focus on a different aspect the next watch. It just has that quality that you can just keep coming back to time and time again.
Yes. So I guess we are going to discuss everything.
Yeah, definitely.
Not gonna leave anything like uncovered. So there are reveals in this, I would say, but I think that it's certainly a film that benefits from a second and third watch. You can
always
fully appreciate it, because I think, you know, even just seeing the opening, you see just two women wearing, you know, high-necked Victorian-style dresses, kind of dancing together, waltzing on a bridge.
with the record player.
With the Victrola playing. Because
this takes place in 1905.
Yes, 1905 would be the time. And so it is so otherworldly and confounding that
right away
you're just in a daze.
And that's the way a lot of his movies do play out. Whether or not it is seemingly in the real world, it always feels like it is in another world.
Yes, and the having this era, the turn of the century, the 19th century, 18th century, not 20th century, turn of the 20th century is what it'd be. We're in the 21st century. Again, that shit, I'm so bad at it. The turn of the 20th century, women in corsets. We have a historical farmhouse, but you also have that time of people being able to disappear, you know?
Yes.
Not understanding, like, you can go to a new town, you can reinvent yourselves. There's not a lot of communication between different towns, different eras, and just thinking about, you know, a bunch of women whose husbands are working or that don't care where they are or they aren't involved or they're just on their own and they're independently wealthy and they get to do what they want, kind of wandering about and looking for trouble to get into, right?
Yeah, yeah. After the scene of the two women dancing, we cut to a bloody scene.
Well, so it's very like the opening is very, it reminded me of Initiation of Sarah. You know, we see this long pan across a altar of sorts with a book that reminds you of why books used to be expensive, you know, like hand bound, containing fabric, containing things that are etchings stitched together. You know, the book itself, you're just like, what is this?
It makes you think
of, you know, private and real magic and secrets that are kept among small groups of people and never revealed that could affect the world were they able to get out.
And just the way the hands are moving and turning the pages is so... I love this image. And yeah, again, the way the pages sound turning, the way the writing looks. When people, just the care that was taken for everything.
Yes. And I was trying to do translations of it. Some of it's in Old English. I did see like Martin Luther's name. And then we cut to a scene that, again, is so perfect for Jean Roland to have. And it's women in high neck, corseted, eyelet, lace dresses standing in a bloody floored slaughterhouse.
Right. And it's so visceral.
Absolutely. And you're like, what are these dames doing here? What in the heck could be going on? And then a woman is explaining that, you know, this is here to drink fresh bull's blood to cure their anemia and, you know, basically partaking in health. And then we see a woman who is Elizabeth rubbing her lips in blood. And it gets so close. It's not a close-up. It's beyond a close-up. It's
perfect,
it's uncomfortable,
striking, glittering image.
Mm-hmm. It is maniacal. It's silent. And you hear the words, c'est thérapeutique. Ce n'est pas un jeu, mademoiselle. It's therapy. It's not a game, madam, as she's rubbing the blood on her lips and staring into the camera.
So if you're not in at this point, then I don't know what to tell you. But for us, it's those moments when you see a movie and you're honed in on the director and you just have that overwhelming feeling of, oh, this is for us.
Yeah, 100%. You're like, I'm in. Cut to a dandy fellow, as I say in my notes. Oh my God, so offensive, dandy fellow. It's a handsome criminal crew. They're all wearing some form of stripes. Very, very French. Very fetching. And guess what? They're fighting over their loot. They're fighting over a purse of gold coins. And we have a gal that dresses like a lad. She seems like she's pretty bad. And the most striking of all the criminals grabs her and holds a gun to her and says, "Don't follow me on a shoot." And he's wearing a beautiful red blazer and he has stunning blonde hair, much like stunning Steve Austin in his youth.
Amazing.
It's really quite amazing. And he runs away with the lady and the loot.
Sure does, into the rural area of this town. And
then you kind of understand the film that you've gotten yourself
into. Yeah, and even the criminals are like, she's, you know, he's got her, like, he's going to get away with the loot. And they're like, she's gonna figure it out. She'll figure it out. She knows what she's doing. And she does try to seduce him, you know, taking off her shirt, which, I mean, hey.
Her nips are stunning. Like,
fantastic.
Roland.
Yeah, I get it. I would have, like, probably, like, done, you know, I'd have been like,
The people in Roland's films are really attractive. Like, he does a really good job at finding very attractive people. And not, like, just, like, boring ways, but in real, like, human ways. Like, the guys are hairy in all the right ways or endowed in the right ways, and the women are singular looking, you know, they really don't seem like anyone else. And then it is kind of the way he portrays the women, which is you know, I'm not going to say unique, but they're not ever victims.
I would say unique for sure.
Yeah.
I mean,
like, they're always like, if they're captive, it's by their own choice.
Well, yeah, and especially in this one. And yeah, so, you know, she does try to trick him out of the loop, but you know what? He does.
He manages to run away. He does manage to run away. She does try to seduce him. She has really brown tan nips, and it's really fantastic, and she's great. But again, it is that thing where you get to this scene, and you're like, oh, wow, what am I watching? Because in one hand, you have the buttoned-up society. I'm going to say Victorian, like 20th century Victorian. Yeah. Okay, so buttoned up, but so promiscuous here, right? Then, as our handsome thief, Mark, is running away, we see the castle, we see the mist, we see the moat, we see the singular
bridge.
And it is, like, we get to this point, and you kind of see the, like, you know, when the warmth makes a bit of mist hang on top of the water, and Mike, you were like, oh, this is so Black Metal.
Well, in my mind, it was like, this is where the Black Legion's recorded. This is the castle in the middle of the forest where Mutilation recorded. You know, like,
and
that,
why couldn't it be?
That was like our, and that got us on this big kick, a big Mutilation kick, and I really felt that this is I was like, this is the castle where it was recorded. I love the way this looks. I love this. And then you get a glimpse of the two women. Just immediately, you know, you're in for trouble when you see these two, and just the way they are and the way they're presenting themselves and acting, it's like, oh, you know,
you get Elizabeth and Ava popping their little heads.
The kind
out
of trouble that you just dive headfirst into.
100%. So he comes upon a castle, not knowing what he's going into, but he is engaging in a bit of a shootout with the criminals that he has taken the loot from. He was going to go, you know, fence it over in Paris, but they did not trust him. And Mike, maybe with good reason, maybe not with good reason. I don't know. It seems like, you know, maybe they were right. So he is taking refuge in this castle, and he comes upon people he thinks are chambermaids. And he gets out of them that the owners are away and that they are the only ones there. So what does he do? He locks them in the room.
Well, I like, too, when they're introducing them in and they're coming in and out of doors and they're kind of sneaking around and running around and just there's
popping one head in and out.
Yeah, yeah.
Playing
like,
coy.
Oh, what are you going to do? Don't, you know, are you going to rape us? Like,
yes,
you know,
no,
like,
exactly.
Are you going to abuse us? You know, like, and they're just being so, like...
They said, vous pouvez nous violer. And, like, that means, like, you can violate us if you want.
So it's like, this guy is just like,
they're
oh,
just, like,
boy.
Kissing each other and, like, putting on a show. And he keeps referring to it as la comédie,
the joke. Yeah, he's like, boy, here we go.
Yeah, and so he tries to lock him in a room, but they're like, I have the key.
They're so mischievous.
Yes, they're so mischievous. They're so playful. And, oh, I guess we didn't mention this entire time we've been watching them kind of have sex with each other, you know.
I mean, you know, they're
they're a thing. You know, prior to him arriving, you know, they have a thing going. So I guess
and that kind that of can thing be said. That
it's not just performative for his benefit.
Hey, yeah.
It is a thing for their benefit.
Again, and our benefit as the viewer.
And our benefit by proxy.
Because it is fantastic to look at.
Again, the women in Jean Roland are not victims. None of them are. The women are in control. Well, we must remember this. And so much along that vein, they sneak out of their room and they go into a painting and they grab some hidden knives and they try to torment him and scare him with their knives, saying, our weapons are silent.
Dude,
isn't he a handsome man?
Our weapons are silent. Yeah, the way they come out. It's so great.
Yes. And so, you know, they come at him like trying to give him a little tease and a little torment and you know, sensually make him curious enough to bite, to stay, to believe he's in danger or something. They're just playing with him.
Well, they're trying to keep him there for a big gathering that is going to be happening at the castle. So they are trying to keep him there.
And so, you know, we have Elizabeth and we have Ava. Mm-hmm. Ava is the blonde. Ava is
Brigitte.
I'm pretty
Is that correct?
Sure.
Uh-oh.
Yeah,
there.
Ava is Brigitte.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, got Elizabeth. Got it. Ava's blonde. Elizabeth is brunette. They're both phenomenal.
Got it.
Elizabeth's the one with the blood on her lips. I wrote it down. That means it has to be true. If I wrote it down, I couldn't have gotten it wrong in the moment. So it's never happened. It's literally never happened. And so, you know, in order to keep him, we don't know why they're trying to keep him there. We don't know why they're interested in him. We think that these are just two ladies that are in the moment and just looking for fun or looking to enjoy themselves or just demented. So Ava leads Mark off by the hand to play a sex game with him and let him ravish her. And he says that, you know, he's taken aback. He wants to turn the tables. He was like, I'll do it my way, you know, that sort of thing. And as he walks away, Elizabeth is staring into the fire and she says, and I think this is like the most like haunting part. And she says, too bad you've stumbled into the universe of Elizabeth and Ava, the universe of madness and death. What a pity.
As this movie goes on, it's these moments where we just will just look at each other just with like fire in our eyes. Yeah. Like, oh my God.
The universe of madness and death.
Universe of madness.
Too bad you stumbled into the universe of Elizabeth and Ava.
Dude, that's so incredible. Yeah, but then Elizabeth starts getting jealous, or seemingly so. I like when she takes the gun and like puts it in her mouth. And then you hear a gunshot, but she obviously didn't, you know. Well, again, you're in that moment watching this movie where you're like, well, are they supernatural? Did she like shoot herself but nothing happened?
Yes. Are they ghosts? Already dead?
Yeah.
And you know, they're kind of seemingly specters haunting the place. And yeah, exactly, like, is she already dead? Did she shoot herself again? And then Ava comes in to see what happened and she says, I only fucked him to keep him from leaving. So again, then we're like, well, then why are you trying to keep him here? And, you know, the whole thing is just such a wonderful mystery to kind of watch unfold. And part of also what makes it much like Jess Franco is the phenomenal backdrop that's available.
Whoa,
like the
yes.
French
yeah.
mansion house,
it's
town,
incredible.
Manor house that's available to them. Like truly like having a historical place to make this go down is eye candy.
Yeah, and even this one doesn't necessarily take put there, you know, there's the moat, there's water, but both Jess and Jean Roland, water and rocky beaches would be big forms of inspiration to mm-hmm. both of them, right? And so, you know, so many Jess Franco movies, there's in some way that even Bloody Moon, there's a pool. Like, it's
yeah,
like even
exactly.
if they're, you know, like, yeah. like it, there's always water, right? And so here we have the moat and in the castle, and like you said, Terry, yeah, the setting is just so intoxicating.
And we get these beautiful uses of, you know, interior, exterior, space, and light. Like, I think the shots are really good because I don't know what makes the outside look so blue, but everything outside looks cool and blue, and everything inside looks, you know, just warm and glowing and golden and skin colored. I don't know. The way that it's shot really uses his space, his place as well.
No question. It's incredible.
And, you know, again, we're having something with such a minimal budget.
Yeah, he always worked on a very low budget.
And really uses his assets to the fullest extent. And I think that's great. So then, you know, after the gunshot, after everybody comes out of their daze, after Ava has sex with Mark, you know, then Elizabeth walked up and said, "Did you not know she's just trying to keep you here? I'm trying to save you. I can help you get away. Did you not realize that I love you?" And so then all of a sudden she's just saying, "I love you and I want to save you." And you're like, what is this dizzy world? What is this?
And who
craziness?
Who do I believe? Yeah. It's the world of madness and death.
Yeah. And again, you know, it's that thing where you don't understand if you're supposed to be taking the things that are going down literally or
right,
not
right,
literally.
Which is so, and even like having watched it multiple times, you're still asking yourself these. Yeah.
And so, you know, at this point, that's when the band of marauders come back. And of course they send the woman up, and brave Ava is going to grab the bag and walk outside and, you know, try to give them their money back. But then they want to make a deal. They don't trust her. They want to make the handoff. They want to count the dough. They want to take her out to the stables. And, you know, this, as it goes by, this is such a fast watch.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, it's nonstop action.
I would say all his movies really zip by. You know?
Yeah. But this is just, like, over in a blink.
Yeah.
And it's over an hour and a half long.
I would have said it's under.
Is it?
I don't know.
I think it is.
I'm just saying it's, like, so fast. It just moves so fast.
Oh, I lied. You know it's an 81 minutes.
Oh, so it is.
It's fast as hell.
Yeah.
Well, that's why it's fast, because it's 81 minutes long. You know what? Oh, the seeming eternity goes right by. So we have them going out to the stables, where the woman from earlier and her husband demand that La Petite Bourgeoisie trades dresses, and then she's going to behave exactly as his wife behaves.
Yeah.
So Ava's ordered to take off
her
dress.
I'm going to treat you like I treat my wife.
So he takes her into a horse stall, which, again, I just hope it's clean and there's not shit everywhere. That's all I can think of when I think of those. Maybe it's just, I guess there hasn't been a horse there in a while. So
let's hope. Maybe we're good.
As one who has mucked stalls, I trust them not.
Yeah.
So she'll go, the wife is going to go for a walk in the park, and he's going to treat her like her. So, of course, we get a passive rape scene. But again, who's coming to dinner tonight? Who's going to show up? La Mort. And death does arrive when she stabs him under his ribs and he silently dies.
And then we get the iconic, and yes, I will use that word because it is.
It is, absolutely.
Of Brigitte in the cloak with the scythe.
So she had laid down the cloak to have sex upon, and then had to undress, of course. And then as she gets up, she picks up the cloak and puts it on. And since she is in the barn, she grabs the scythe, and she must seek her revenge. Or, you know, it's not even revenge. She's just trying to survive. So she's trying to get these people who are in her way out of her way. So she tosses, as they're counting the coins, comes up with her reaper's scythe and slits their necks before they even understand what has happened.
It's so incredible. Then walking up over the bridge, over the moat.
She's a vision of death. She's nude. She's under a cloak. She is unwavering. She is no longer in play mode. She is in work mode. She encounters the woman in her dress who was the bandit's wife. And she has a tiny knife and she's threatening her with it. And it's just two menacing, murderous women encountering each other in a bridge. But on this evening, Ava has taken on the body of death and is the Reaper and behaves as such.
Oh. And then after she disposes of her, when she walks back in the castle past them, past Mark and past Elizabeth,
mm-hmm.
That scene's so great because she just walks by. It's not even focused on her.
Mm-hmm.
It's focused on them and the way she walks by. And it's like Mark is finally realizes like what's happening. It's sort of like, yes. Oh, what the fuck? Like, this is happening.
He's like, you killed that woman. We'll have to tell somebody. Like, he's really alarmed. Like,
all of a sudden,
killing someone was never on his plate.
He realized now he is in over his head.
Yes. And I love the shot in that. It's so smooth, and you can only imagine that he's on a boat, you know, going away from the
drawbridge.
You were
saying that, yeah, the way some of the shots look are really incredible.
And, like, slinking backwards. Like, I mean, I don't know. You could have put a crane on the water. But
there's no crane being used. There's zero chance of that happening.
Yeah, no, it's on a goddamn boat. It's on a boat, and it's great. And it's a fantastic shot coming away from the bridge, so smooth, slinking backwards, really, really eerie feel. And then you start getting the inkling of something supernatural based on what just happened. And then it becomes dark, and Madame appears.
The gathering is going to begin. Do you love Madame Terror? Were you very much honing in, being like, hey.
Relatable energy, I believe, is what I wrote.
Yeah.
No, she's fantastic. I mean, you know, she's the matron. She's the leader of their coven or whatever. What say you? Whatever is going to happen.
Well, that's the thing. And again, it's
ambiguous.
It is. And even when the final moments are happening, it is never explained whether or not anything is actually supernatural happening.
Yes.
And I love that. I love that.
Yes, exactly. So there are women clearly gathering for a ceremony, and the ceremony begins at midnight. And at midnight,
our man Mark.
Death appears.
And I got our man Mark, and he's their focus. He is going to be their victim. And hey, you know what? Sounds like a good time to me. You know, I feel like I would have got
a good time. He had. I don't think he had a great time
when he's like dancing
around. He
had
moments
with them.
Of good times. So she's like, "Let me look at you. You've been bleeding. You're handsome. Do you mind if I examine you as if you were my horse?
Do you mind if I examine you as if you were my horse?
Yeah. And then she does tell him that no one survives their secret ceremony. And the ceremony starts at midnight and not a second before. So in the meantime, everybody's got to fire up the Victrola, play a waltz.
Dancing around. Playing sex games.
Absolutely no decorum. Like, they play a really reasonable paced song, and Mark is not having it. He wants something more frantic, you know what I mean? Something at a 120 BPM. None of this 90 business. Yeah. None of this 70 business. And they declare at midnight, you'll see what seven women can do to a lone man. And I know, Mark, that you, Mark, I know that you would be intrigued by that.
I would like to. I would go ahead
take
and
take all my blood. I don't need all this blood.
I would go ahead
blood.
And volunteer.
Oh my God.
To find out what seven women can do to a man at midnight. If mm-hmm. you know, I will go ahead and donate my body to that
your
cause.
Drain you of blood.
You'd
have fun until then, I guess. So
you go out having a great time.
And
how
I was
many
trying
people
to
can say that?
And they play like I was like, it's not Marco Polo. Is that Blind Man's Bluff? Like,
yes,
what's the game?
Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah,
Blind
yeah,
Man's
yeah,
Bluff.
Yeah,
is that
yeah.
what that is?
I think they say it in there too. Actually, I can't remember.
I don't think they do, but I think I said that out loud.
You might
I
have
was
said it out
yammering
loud.
At this point in the film because we'd already seen it. So
we're having a good time. We were talking about what we're going to talk about. You know,
yeah,
in the episode.
Yeah, we did a bit of film watching and talking.
I mean, you know.
So Ellen. The face that launched 1,000 ships in the ancient days is the name of our matron, Ellen. And he won because he guessed her in Blind Man's Bluff. So she gets to be 15 minutes a slave.
And, you know, I feel like 15 minutes is not that long. So I just kind of felt like he was taking it a little too slow. He should have really ramped
like
it up.
15 minutes is a really long time. He only got to like her taking her clothes off. Although those are really hard clothes to get
well,
off.
That's what
so
I'm saying.
I don't blame him. And then he kind of faked her out like he was going to burn her with a cig.
Yeah. And then that was it.
Yeah. He didn't really burn her.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
I feel like he could have really, you know, look, he didn't have much longer. He didn't have much longer to live.
So that kind of stuff, the cutting and the burning, it doesn't hurt in the moment. It just hurts later. And I think that's like the pain that we all remember on things like that. Like when you get a cut, it doesn't hurt the moment it's cut. Unless it's super deep, and then it, you know, that hurts. But
well, I always said when I had my nose ripped open,
yeah,
at a show
by a guitar peg,
it didn't hurt.
Mm-mm.
When it happened, and that's why I knew in that moment that, yeah, this is bad, because I'm like, something fucked up just happened, and it didn't hurt. And then I looked down, and it was like a pool of blood.
Oh, it was so bloody.
And I had, you know, whatever, had to get 8 stitches in my nose, but it was the fact that it didn't hurt. Made me like, oh.
Oh, yeah, I can see right into your face. Uh-oh, your whole nostril is open. That's probably
not good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's how that kind of stuff goes. It's like, when it happens, it doesn't hurt, but I think that the pain we remember is like, when it starts getting itchy, or like, if you cut your hand, and then you're moving it later, slices, and it breaks open again.
Slices don't hurt as much, but what hurts in the moment is, for example, when I scraped my finger against a brick wall a few weeks ago, it hurt so bad in the moment, and it really did scrape off skin.
But it was like the pressure of it, I think, because you bashed it too.
Like, no, I didn't. It totally, because I was carrying a box down,
yeah,
and the way I was carrying it, I was like carrying it with my arms around it.
You raked your knuckles.
And I walked down these stairs that turn,
mm-hmm,
and there was the brick wall is where you turn, and it just scraped against the brick wall. And I mean, it's skin. It was ripped off.
I saw it.
It hurt.
I saw
so
it. You're
bad
showing it to me now, like I didn't see it. I put Band-Aids on it. I cleaned it up.
So I think it's the slices, like, yeah, are what, those don't hurt in the moment, but scrapes hurt in the moment.
But the burns, I guess the burns sting. I don't know. I thought that I'd been burned. I had a cup of boiling water poured on the back of my hand. Do you remember that? That giant burn on the back of my,
yes,
hand?
Yes.
And then I was wearing a wrist guard, so the metal plate fused to my wrist, and it ripped all my skin off. Now that, I should have gotten a skin graft. Yeah. That hurt.
Yeah.
But a cigarette on my skin did not hurt.
Hey, look.
I don't know. I'm just saying. Been having a lot of smoking dreams lately. Anybody else have dreams about smoking or eating cigarettes? Like, just eating them and just thinking how delicious tobacco is?
I had a dream about eating Korean barbecue last night, so I think we're going to have to do that at some point.
Well, I'm not going to eat cigarettes.
Okay, good.
But in my mind, in my dreams, I love them and they're delicious. And then in my dreams, I eat things I shouldn't eat, like a table.
I'm hoping I have a dream tonight that's about being a lone man and seeing what 7 women will do to him at midnight.
Yeah, I hope you get 15 minutes as Alan is your slave. There you go. How about that?
Sounds good to me.
You play that blind man's bluff. So, again, midnight approaches. And Mark should have been taking advantage of all this time because he is,
I think
at this point, he's the fool. He's the king for a day.
That's the thing. And I kind of feel like he was just like, oh, this is going all night. We're having a good time. Like, he didn't know what was coming.
Yeah. But that is much like in, why can't I say it?
I don't know.
The Wicker Man.
Oh, yes.
I had Burning Man in my head. And I just really didn't want to say that. Much like that role of king for a day. King for a day is always a fool because who would want to be king for a day, right? So he is playing that role in their ceremony. And as it approaches, he's not taking full advantage. And the women open the drawer and pull out their ceremonial robes, which are various shades of blood. And it is time to begin.
It sure is. But things don't go exactly according to plan, do they, Tara?
No, because he leaves. Well, this is the point where I just want to go back. Where this is where we're wondering, is this going to be supernatural?
Right, yeah.
What's going to happen at midnight? Is death going to ride up on a pale horse? Is there going to be another character introduced? Is something supernatural about to happen? So, you know, at the point that the women are putting on their robes and midnight has been said to be approaching, you start to get nervous about what's happening. And I think Roland builds the anticipation really well here. And I think he builds anticipation well in films. Like, sometimes you have films where you have no anticipation at all and it just kind of happens and you don't care. That is not the case. You're waiting with bated breath.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so as Ava takes Mark out to the stables, or as he runs out to the stables, and she follows with her scythe, and they meet their fate outside, the unexpected happens, and Elizabeth walks in, and she has Mark's gun that she's been itching to use, and she shoots Ava.
Yeah.
And she is so taken aback.
And this whole scene is incredible because you don't, like you said, Tara, you don't see it coming. And then when we have her crawling back all bloody,
and
crawling
looks,
over the bridge.
Yes. And Ava looks up and she said, "You were mine. I loved you." Like, again, they were together. She's like, why this treachery?
Yeah.
You know, why did this treachery take place? And Ava is no longer the killer, and she's crawling up to the bridge, you know, seeking something from the other women.
She looks so incredible, drained of even, you know, drained of color. Her skin is even whiter than it was before. She's bleeding, and now the women descend on her.
Yeah, she's crawling up the walk, dying, and she starts being consumed violently by all the other women in the ropes, except for Helen. And they say, "Hurry, she's still warm." And they're all eating her, and she's, you know, barely crying out, reaching out for help, being in agony. And they say, "Now we can rest. It'll be daylight soon." So, you know, these women didn't care from whence they got their blood. All they did was want their blood, and that satisfied their thirst. And it came out that they were always getting once a year one man and drinking his blood, but it seems as though this time they were indiscriminate as to who they would consume.
But Elizabeth attempts to run away with Mark.
And they run into the Hall of the Birds, into the
this
to the
setting
big
looks incredible.
House. The pigeon loft.
But she is going to have a change of heart here, a change of blood, a change of bloody heart here. And she is going to take out Mark.
La perversité.
Shoots him.
Perversity in the way, not like our perversity, Mike, like the perversité.
Exactly. And so she is going to drink his blood. She is going to take the one man at this time.
And night. When he asked why, she said, "I did love you, but you rejected me. I loved Ava, but I killed her." When he's looking for explanations, he's like, "You wanted to save me. Like, what's going on? Why did you do this?" She's like, "Well, I loved you.
Yeah.
She rejected me. And I loved Ava, but I killed her. Don't look for me to make sense about any of this. I don't think I love you. What I loved about you was the insanity of desire."
Exactly.
Love it. The insanity of desire, needing desire, love and death. Like, and I was, what was I reading about chasing desire? How even like when people are online shopping, truly what they're loving is the desire for something.
Oh,
and
definitely.
Then when you get
yeah,
it, you no
the,
longer want it.
The chase is better than the catch idea, mm-hmm. right? You know, yes. I mean, of course, that's what so much stuff is, and that's what. Down to mundane stuff like that, Tara, and down to this, you know, the desire of the lust, mm-hmm. death, and then once it happens, it's like that the desire is over, right? Mm-hmm. And so then you go into the remission, or you go into the depression until it starts to ramp up again.
Well, and then you think maybe Elizabeth was being brutally honest, and she changed her mind, and she was like, "Well, I thought I loved you, but you know, things change, and now that I see you, you know, with calm clarity, not so much."
Exactly, calm clarity. No, I mean, it's true.
The thing that dispels that though is that she walks up the path and she sees Helen, and she said he killed Ava. She lies.
Yeah,
like she totally lies. She's a malicious woman. She's treacherous.
Yeah,
it's the treacherous world of Elizabeth and Ava.
That's true, and the
madness,
the madness of their world. And I do love the final scene where she and Helene says, "You know, you look so great with blood on your lips." And it's just the two of them on the bridge.
She says, "You're beautiful like that with his blood on your mouth."
Boom,
and we're done.
End of the movie. Perfect.
But again,
perfect movie.
But again, like, this is like, you're questioning if it's not directly supernatural. Nothing in this is directly supernatural. You know, it is something that would be like an actual blood cult that would exist. It's a blood fetish, or it's the power of belief and the power of suggestion and all of these malevolent, potent women, you know?
Absolutely.
And madness mixed with death.
And it's the way it's the way that you can live in that putting the power into items, into substance, into sensation, and harnessing that power into your life. And in a way, it is supernatural, no matter what.
You could be inspired by the art piece that Jean Roland has created that provokes so many thoughts and feelings that relate to you on a metaphysical level and on a personal level, that make you feel, while at one point you feel that humans can be violent and mad and are not to be trusted, you also feel the potential for love and warmth and trust and decadent pleasure.
Thank you.
Is that more
Tara,
like it?
Thank you for being
you sure you
with
don't
me
want to sacrifice people?
I'm the one who's volunteering you know, to be in the middle of seven women to find out what they can do to one man at midnight. So
I don't want you to do that. I do not endorse. I will not allow you to volunteer yourself for such a practice.
Okay.
I'm sorry. That's too much.
I will listen to you.
I don't want you to do that. I don't want you to be a highwayman and rob people of their golden coins. I don't want to join a group of marauders.
You want me to be a dandy highwayman?
I don't want you to be a dandy highwayman. Yeah, like,
okay.
Tara,
I will listen to
for
you.
For that aspect, not so much.
I will listen to you, Tara.
If you want to wear maybe a frilly shirt.
See, I don't know.
I would allow it.
I don't know if that's really
my
style.
You're a lovely... like a beautiful sheer caftan with nothing underneath.
You can do that.
I already do that.
Yeah, fine.
I have one. It's not red, it's black, but that's still fine. Similar outfit.
Anywho, what a film. What an incredible
film. What a joy.
What an incredible director. We'll obviously be doing more Jean Roland movies throughout the year and throughout Underground Espionage. Not sure what we got coming up next week. I will say stay tuned to... wherever you stay tuned to us, not on this podcast. We got a really cool thing that is dropping in a few days that we will be able to announce. Something we've sort of hinted at, that we have a cool thing coming. It is happening.
Really?
In a couple days.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So
did you tell me that?
I might not have mentioned.
Did not tell me that.
I definitely told you. You definitely knew when it was dropping, but you might not realize what day it is.
Okay. A lot of things have happened.
So it'll be before the next episode. So stay. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
And yeah, not sure what we got lined up, but we do, again, as always, we're working on some interviews behind the scenes and working on some really cool stuff for the underground.
I don't know if you know this, Mike, but it's leprechaun season. Are we going to watch some leprechaun films?
I mean, anyone who knows us knows our feeling about
leprechaun.
I've
been kind of thinking Leprechaun in Vegas.
Might have to happen. Hey, if I don't get me shilling, I lose some killing. It is that.
I tried to do that really quietly and not blow out everybody's eardrums.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the support. As always, stay underground. We'll talk to you soon.